On today's episode of Hoops 360, Vanderbilt head coach Shea Ralph gives us a behind-the-scenes look of her team and her coaching philosophy. We'll highlight Vanderbilt's rise to the top of the AP poll and discuss some other teams who are on the hot seat heading into March. Let's get it. What is up, everybody? Welcome in to a new edition of Hoops 360. On today's show, we'll catch up with Vanderbilt head coach Shea Ralph about her coaching philosophies and how she brought Vanderbilt women's basketball into a powerhouse this season. Plus, we also call out which teams are feeling a little bit uncomfortable as Selection Sunday is getting closer and closer. Plus, as always, our spotlight players of the week. So let's get into it. She is Cassandra Negley. I am Caroline Fenton. And I want to touch on Cass. You know, we'll catch up with Shea Ralph here in just a bit. I'm so excited for everybody to listen to our conversation with her. She is a wealth of basketball knowledge, a wealth of wisdom. I could listen to her all day long. So I want to use that as kind of a jumping off point to talk about this Vanderbilt women's basketball team. I mean, we looked back in the history books. They haven't won a tournament game in over a decade. Now, Vanderbilt sits at the number 5 ranked team in the country in year 5 in the Shea Ralph regime. Looking at Vanderbilt's resume and their body of work and what they have upcoming throughout the rest of the season, 2 games left in the regular season, they're hosting Alabama, then on the road at Tennessee on Sunday, and then, of course, the SEC tournament in Greenville, South Carolina. You'll be there. Mm-hmm. So excited to hear about all of your boots on the ground reporting there. But from knowing what we know about Vanderbilt, do they have what it takes to be a 1 seed in this year's tournament?
Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. And the committee clearly feels that way, having put them in that final 1 seed, which I think, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but that was a surprise to me. I still believe we're going to have the second reveal on Sunday. So we're going to learn a little bit more about how the committee feels, what principles kind of carried through, what they're really thinking. I still believe for that 4, 5, 6 true seed line, it is going to depend on this next week, the final week of the regular season in the SEC tournament. How do those teams finish in the standings and how do they finish in the SEC tournament? When it comes to Vanderbilt being a number 1 seed, I think they probably dropped below Texas at this point. I still think Texas has the better resume. They have significant wins over UCLA and South Carolina. They did lose that SEC regular season game to South Carolina, but they won in November. But Vanderbilt could very easily sneak back in, especially, say, when we do get to the SEC tournament next week, if they knock off some of these SEC teams, you know. We're going to get into the Shea Ralph interview, but she had said there was a point a couple weeks ago where she was told, like, the back end of her schedule, we're playing ranked teams all the way down. And that's what the SEC is. So they have the talent to be a number 1 seed. I think they have the resume. It's just about where that resume falls with everyone else.
And that's the interesting thing about the SEC is Vanderbilt's going to be basically, the SEC is essentially going to be cannibalizing itself. Like, Vanderbilt is up against some of these other teams in the SEC for one of those final top seeds. You know, you look at Texas, you look at the South Carolina, you look at an LSU. Vanderbilt currently sits at 7 in the net behind those 3 teams, but the SEC giveth and the SEC taketh away. The SEC is deep. The SEC is tough. The SEC is difficult. That's the hard part for any coach in the Southeastern Conference. But also, it gives you these opportunities to boost up your resume. That in Greenville, South Carolina, that's going to be the place where resumes can be built up probably more than any other conference in all of women's college basketball. So while I don't think wins over Alabama and Tennessee are necessarily going to be enough for Vanderbilt to catapult themselves or solidify themselves into one of those 1 seeds with a little bit of help around them, some losses at the top from, you know, the South Carolinas, the UCLAs. I'm not even going to mention UConn in the conversation because, like, knock on wood, that team's not losing. Don't come for me, UConn fans, if I just jinxed you. But Vanderbilt has plenty of opportunity in the SEC tournament to do that.
The flip side of that, too, though, is they have opportunity to lose it, right?
True.
I think we've seen over the past however many weeks since that first reveal that some teams might have lost their positioning because they took bad losses. You know, Duke, Louisville, are two of them. Ole Miss, which is in the SEC, was not competitive in some of their losses. So for teams like Vanderbilt and Texas going down the back end, like, it looks on paper like they have those wins on lock, but they can't let go of that and look ahead to what's coming in the SEC tournament. I think also the interesting thing about conference tournaments, and we're going to go deep on conference tournaments next week, but you're playing every day, and that adds a different aspect. And I know, for example, last year, there was a lot of talk about starting times and how that impacts, and having just sat in the mock selection, stuff like that is going to be brought up as not a differentiator, but just, hey, know that this happened, that the team finished playing at 10 p.m. and now they're playing at noon the next day. And so that will impact how we view these teams too.
It's such a grind. And sometimes this time of year is just a little bit of luck.
Sometimes.
Of who gets the health luck? Like, who gets the injury luck? Who is healthy enough at the right time? Because not only are these conference tournaments going to be a grind, once you get into the NCAA tournament, I mean, it's constant basketball. So who is deep enough and who's healthy enough? And also the draw is part of the luck here too, not just in the NCAA tournament, of course, but the draw that you're eventually going to get in the SEC tournament. I don't think that there's any quote-unquote easy path in the SEC tournament, because on any given night, any of these unranked teams in the SEC can beat you. Vanderbilt learned their lesson with a loss on the road at unranked Georgia just last week. So there's no easy path necessarily, but there are inevitably going to be paths that are easier or more opportunistic than others that adds to this as well.
Yeah. And for teams like Vanderbilt who have the talent, like, they feel confident about themselves. They've notched some huge wins. They have one of the best players in the country. They have one of the best freshmen in the country. You know, moving forward, Shea Ralph had mentioned to us a little later that she thinks kind of hour to hour sometimes. And so for Vanderbilt, it's really just like, who's next on our schedule? Take care of business. Like, be in the best form for the tournament. I'm sure they are not necessarily sitting in the locker room thinking about what do we have to do to get that last number one seed.
You can't, right?
No.
Because then at that point, that becomes so daunting. Mm-hmm. That becomes overwhelming to look at what you have ahead of you, understanding what everything that you've done already, the grind of the season that you already have under your belt, and then you still have to finish out the regular season, and then you have the grind of the SEC tournament, and then you're sitting and waiting with bated breath to see what your fate in the NCAA tournament looks like. It's, you know, we always make fun of it, like, as coach speak, whenever coaches say, like, one day at a time, one opponent at a time, we don't look too far ahead. And there is an element of that that is totally coach speak that makes us roll our eyes a little bit. But there is an element of that that is total and complete truth. But when you look at this Vanderbilt team cast, and, you know, you went through the workshop, and you went through the gauntlet of learning what it's like to be on the NCAA selection committee. Cass did an awesome breakdown of that in our last episode, so you can find that on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page and on your preferred podcast platform. But from what you know about the selection process, what is Vanderbilt missing right now on their resume relative to some of the other top teams in the country that they need to add if they want to solidify that one seed?
I mean, at this point, like, it is what it is. Don't make any missteps. I think if I were on the committee, I'm looking at Texas and Vanderbilt right now. Texas has, you know, more wins above the bubble. They have a better net. They've played the tougher schedule outside of the conference. They have the wins against a number one seed. You know, if it's a South Carolina-Texas SEC championship game, like, that matters as well. Can you make your championship game? Can you be competitive with a number one seed? You know, that would lean to Texas. But I guess if you're Vanderbilt and recency does matter, the recent result, and if you're playing your best basketball, if they can make the SEC championship and they compete with South Carolina, or maybe say they even topple South Carolina, which only two teams have done, I think, in the past 9 years in that championship game, certainly that's going to mean a lot. And maybe that's what pushes them into the final number one seed. But either way, Vanderbilt is certainly in a really good position being that far up and playing what seems like some of their best basketball to the year at a time when it matters.
Oh, and they're, you know, we we're always optimistic about Vanderbilt on this show, but we also, you know, as we got to the beginning of conference play, we said, let's also acknowledge that Vanderbilt at that time hadn't necessarily gone through the, you know, the toughest matchups in the SEC. But, you know, they're able to play three consecutive top 25 teams, top 20 teams in Kentucky, Oklahoma, and Texas. That head-to-head win over Texas, it proves that not only was Vanderbilt a good story being able to beat up on some of the bottom teams of the SEC, but no, Vanderbilt absolutely belongs there, not just at the top of the SEC, but the top of the nation as well. And I bring up the head-to-head matchup against Texas. Vanderbilt did win that game 86-70. Because you bring up Vanderbilt and Texas, kind of how those resumes, at least where things stand right now, it's fair to compare those two head-to-head as which is that number four ranked team in the country, which is going to be that team that gets that last number or last one seed. Important to point out to maybe some Vanderbilt fans that are yelling at us through their headphones or through their screen to put Vanderbilt beat Texas head-to-head. Important to remember, head-to-head is just one data point in this massive cesspool of data points that we have.
Yeah, and common opponents matters too. And so when you're talking about this crush of SEC teams near the top dominating all of these top seeds, it's an opportunity for the committee to look at those common opponents and say, well, who had the better wins of them? Who played more competitively when they did lose? And that'll all be taken into account, not only for that reveal on Sunday, which I think will tell us a lot about what could happen in March, but also when we get to Selection Sunday and a final decision is made for all of these SEC teams, whether they're those kind of top four or the teams that are probably going to be, you know, right on that 4-5 seed line with the difference between hosting and not hosting.
And no, I know that there's going to be a whole lot of people watching, waiting to see what that top four looks like and how the top 16 as a whole pans out. But Vanderbilt women's basketball at the top of the women's basketball world after several years, a stretch where they didn't even make the tournament. And a couple of years ago, first round exit. The year before that, first round exit. Not a lot of postseason success or success as a whole for this women's basketball program. But now Shea Ralph in year five in Nashville has them as a legitimate national championship contender. So we will catch up with the woman in charge of that program, Shea Ralph, as she joins the show coming up next. Joining us now here on Hoops 360 is Vanderbilt head coach Shea Ralph. Shea, appreciate your time and what I know is a very busy time in the season, but Vanderbilt is now ranked number five in the country. You're sitting at just 25-3 overall, second in a very competitive and very deep SEC. If you could put it into words, what has this season, this ride, knowing that it's, you know, there's still plenty of time left and still goals to be achieved, but what has this season been like for you so far?
I would say there, I'm not going to use a lot of words. I think it's been joyful. We just are really having a great time and I absolutely adore my team and my staff and our administration, our fans and community. So many people are a part of this and we've been working for a long time, you know, to get to a point where, you know, obviously we want to be where we are in terms of where we are in the SEC and our record and the possibilities are endless for us right now in March. But I really like to stay focused on just the moment. And, you know, I learned early on, you know, when we weren't doing all of these things, how much I could enjoy the process even then, if I just stayed focused on living like literally an hour to an hour, a minute to a minute, enjoying the relationships that we're building with our team, enjoying what we're doing with our program and the trajectory, whether we get, you know, a lot of recognition or we're winning or not. But this was the vision for the program. This was the vision. And we had a 6-year plan and we wanted to be a household name and we wanted to be a place where people could come and win championships and, you know, build a legacy of their own. We wanted to revitalize Vanderbilt women's basketball. We wanted stands full and families full. I'm getting messages from all my daughter's classmates. They're like, we're coming to games. And we, you know, we had the best time. We're gonna come back next time. So it's just like all the things that we talked about actually wanting to accomplish are starting to come to life. And that's just really cool.
I thought it was interesting you mentioned joyful. We've heard that word so many times in athletics recently, the Olympics, you know, Caitlin Clark's run, you heard that a lot. It seems like athletes and coaches are really trying to focus on like, this is a sport and it should be joyful versus all of that pressure. I'm curious if the joyful part of it was something you tried to channel into this team and into the program, or if it just kind of came organically this year.
I think both. I think that there was a concerted effort on my part just for myself. And I've been saying this recently, but I am the weather, right? So if I show up to this team and in the locker room, whether we're winning or not, and I am stormy and thunder clouds and just, you know, it just puts a damper on everything. And there's always going to be stuff to improve on. There are going to be mistakes that are made, myself included. I think that's how you learn. Performance is learning. And so either way, whether we win or we lose, whether we play great or we don't play well at all, it's an opportunity to learn. And I think you have to be consistent in how you show up in both of those ways. And what I do know, I mean, you know, about being their age and competing at a very high level is that most of what they're going to remember is the process, is the journey, is the relationships. And yes, hopefully big moments like winning championships, those are fleeting though. You're going to remember a lot of all the other moments that built up to that. And when I want my players to do, and my staff and myself, is look back on the time that we spent here at Vanderbilt and remember the joy.
You mentioned a 6-year plan. And in today's society, we live in a smartphone society where you tap it and you want an instant reaction, that the shelf life of coaches in any sport is like an avocado,
yes.
Right? You don't get a lot of leeway. Not a lot of coaches get a lot of time. Yeah. Yeah, it turns brown by day two.
It is a good one, yeah.
So how were you able to sell to the athletic department at Vanderbilt that, look, this thing is going to take some time? Which is something that's not afforded to a lot of coaches.
Yeah, you know, I will say I'm not a saleswoman. That's not my skill set. And so I knew, because I had been an assistant for almost 20 years, knowing that, okay, I'm going to take this step to be a head coach. I really have to be in alignment with the leadership. And that is the athletic director and the chancellor or president of the university, because there's a lot that I can control. I don't control that. I don't control their investment. I don't control their standards and values. I don't control any of that. So, and that was some advice that I had gotten from people that I really respected in the business when I did go out. And so, you know, it really happened. And some people don't like this word, but it really happened organically with Candace, because I was interviewing and Vanderbilt called, and I had 10 minutes into the conversation with her. I felt like I was recruiting her. Like, I want to work for you. But these are the things that are really important to me as we do this together. So yes, we're going to win, you know, yes, we want to win championships, but we're also going to do it the right way. I want to be the premier developmental program in the country. I want to pour into the players holistically. I want their academic degree to be had. That's important to me. We're going to bring in kids here who want to be great at everything. We're going to be members of the community. I'm going to pour into the kids that are there right now. I'm not kicking everybody off the team. We're going to have standards and values too, and it's okay if they don't want to do that, but we're going to give them the chance. Now, remember, this was before NIL. So all of this happened before NIL, which makes this even cooler, because the vision never changed. Now there's just layers to it, right? So I don't control our leadership, but these things that are important to me are still important today. Now we just have this other layer that we're dealing with. And thank goodness it's important to my AD as well. And there were days that she had to remind me, you know, I'm like getting frustrated with losing. And I go in there and I'm like, okay, these are the things. And she's like, wait a minute now. You're coaching culture. we're building. And so I don't know. I do know we would not be here without Candace Story Lee. We would not. I would not. And the players that we have in our locker room, the players that are part of our program, have real relationships with her because she was part of this program. She played at Vanderbilt and has a personal investment, not just in women's basketball, but in the overall student athlete experience here. And I mean, I don't know where else you're going to find that.
I want to get into the development aspect because obviously there's Mikayla Blake's. Aubrey Galvin is having quite the freshman season. But a lot of times you hear from coaches that, you know, in training camp or summer programs or preseason, they have a feel for what the team's going to be, how the team's going to do. Did you have that? Like, at what point did you realize that maybe this was a team that was going to be competing for a number one seed in the tournament?
It's a good question. I don't really think that far ahead. I think I'm more guided by my intuition. And so, like, I think there's a feel that you have to have when you are coaching a great team. There's a feel to their energy. There's a feel to their work. There's a feel to the things that you can't coach: their competitiveness, their confidence, their level of togetherness. How good of teammates are they? How coachable are they? What does that look like? You obviously have to have a certain level of talent and skill, but we went through a lot. I mean, there was a lot of adversity this summer for this team and early into the season for this team. And so I knew we were going to be good because their response was really inspiring. I knew we were going to be good. And then as practice started going on, I was like, all right, okay. Like, they are getting better quickly. They want more. Those are things you can't give a team. I can't give a team, you know, the ability to want things that you have to want to be great. A lot of times coaches are trying to pull them out of them, right? You're trying to pull it out. This team is hungry. They want to be coached. They want to compete. They want to win. And they love doing it together. That's special. And it starts with our guard play, right? And, you know, the guards have the ball in their hands a lot. So Mikayla Blake's, she's elevated everything in our program. She has everything. I mean, she's our best student. She's our best player. She competes at a very high level. She's a great teammate. So now, because of those things, they don't want to let her down. You know, she's a natural leader in that way. And how cool for Aubrey that she has that example to play beside her freshman year. So it was a press conference recently. They asked Aubrey about playing so many minutes. And she, like, looked at me. And first of all, neither one of her and Mikayla want to come out of the game. So, like, I'm so tired of those questions because it's like, how you have to play in 40 minutes. I'm like, no, because when I take them out, they I'm like, I don't want to deal with that. Like, if they want to play, fine. I want them to play too. So great, you know? But then I remember Aubrey's answer was like, well, Mikayla does so much for our team. Like, I'm not going to be the one that's tired. I'm not going to play tired out there. I won't let her down. I'm not going to do that. And what a cool thing. You're talking about X's and O's or strategy or any of that. She was talking about what she's learning from a great leader and what it looks like to show up every day. Again, not something I can coach, but I think that's why you're seeing her get better so quickly. Her make such an impact because she knows that they believe in her and she's being led by, you know, the best player in the country who shows up every day ready to work.
And Mikayla Blake's has been such a joy and such a blast to watch. You know, 250-point games last season, and she hasn't slowed down at all going into this year. The nation's leading scorer. You know, we can see on any given night watching Vanderbilt basketball, we can see the offensive production, right? We can see her leadership on the court. What are maybe some off-the-court things that we don't know about Mikayla Blake's that makes her such a great leader in your eyes?
Her parents. She has great parents. She's a great supportive family. I mean, we were cleaning up after our senior celebration yesterday, and the parents and hers were leading the charge, are helping fold up the chairs. And, you know, like it's there is this real sense of unity. And Mikayla's grounded. She's very humble. She is very unselfish, but she has that, like, just tiny sliver of selfishness when she needs to make the plays that great players have to. She wants to win, but she's a great teammate. She's just you know, the things that everyone says that God doesn't give you everything. I think he gave her close to everything. You know, I do. She has so much to her that makes her great that has nothing to do with me or coaches or, you know, teammates. She just is that. And she is that every day. She's unbreakable. She's unbothered. She is a high level competitor, but just because she wants to be really good and she wants to win and she wants to be part of something that's bigger than herself And that's why she came to Vanderbilt. If you've watched some of her press conferences, and her and I talked about that. That's why I came here. I want to build a legacy that's going to benefit people, that's going to make a difference and make an impact, that's going to change lives. And she came here to do the same thing, to do the uncommon thing. You know, it'd be easier for a really great player to go to one of the programs that usually really great players go to right now. But Michaela came here to help build something and do something that had never been done before. I mean, they've done a lot of great things here, but we haven't won a national championship yet. And all the things that I can't coach that kid to have are what makes her special. And I mean that. I mean that. That she's just different. And last thing I'll say, she plays with joy. She plays with joy. She does. Yeah, she does. She plays with joy. She has a smile on her face. She's, you know, in here cutting up. She'll send me a message. She'll make fun of me in the press conferences. You know, all the things. She's really living in the moment. It's inspiring. I mean, when I was her age, I didn't know how to do that. And, you know, this kid, she's teaching all of us, her teammates and our staff and me. I'm learning a lot from her. She's just special.
Just quickly, you had talked about the non-negotiables in your program. And when asked about Michaela Blakes, you mentioned her parents. How much of a parent's characteristics lead into your thought process when you're recruiting players and the type of player you want in your program?
I'm not sure it's their characteristics. I think, you know, we all have our stuff, right? So like, I'm not a perfect parent at all. Like not
Nobody
even close.
Is.
I'm terrified actually of like the mistakes that I'm going to make. But I think really what I like to see is, you know, I watch the student athletes when I'm recruiting them. As much as I watch them on the court, I watch their interactions. I'm watching their interactions with their parents. Are they treating them with respect? The student athlete to the parent. Are they listening? You know, are they able to be held accountable? And those a lot of times are qualities that they learn before they get here, right? And so my non-negotiables are pretty simple. I'm a big relationship person. And I, you know, I can coach anyone. I can build a relationship with anyone, but I'm not for everyone. And I think we have to be really honest with ourselves about what that looks like. Doesn't make it bad or good, right or wrong. Just, you know, not the right place here for you to thrive. And so all of those things kind of go into the mixture of recruiting because it's like building a puzzle. You got to have the right pieces. They can't be the same pieces. You know what I mean? Like all of those things really matter, including the relationship with the parents, because we're finishing this job together. When they leave here, they're going into the world, right? So I have to have a good partnership with them. And then, you know, the other side is just is the kid's willingness. And so like I need to be their coach. And that they need to be their parents. I'm not your parent. I'll be if I have to be. And then the player has to be completely invested in what we're doing and want to be here. So all of those things have to remain true. And my non-negotiables outside of that are pretty simple. You got to be a good person. And I'm not a big rule person because I think rules are for people who can't follow instructions. Rules are for my 7-year-old. Rules are not for adults because there's only 2 reasons why you don't want to do something or you don't do something. You don't know how or you don't feel like it. So like I'm going to teach, right? And then if I ask you to do something and you know how to do it and you don't do it, well, now we have an issue. Right now, that's a problem. And usually when you start to list out rules, it's if you and I told my players, I said, we can have a whole team notebook. I can put rules in place if you guys think we need them. But I'm going to start with be a good person. And if you're making a decision and a choice and you're like, should I do it? I would just see number one. See number one. Is this the right choice? Is this going to put you in position for success? Is this the right choice for our team? Is it the right choice for our program? Is this what a good person would do? And usually that will answer most everything.
Just listening to you now, and of course, watching and observing the last 5 years at Vanderbilt, it's clear and obvious, you know, your coaching philosophy. After playing for Gino Auriemma, coaching under him for over a decade, how much of your coaching philosophy and pillars of culture building are influenced by Gino Auriemma?
A lot. Most of it, really, right? I think you know, I got to be on the inside for half my life. I was a player there too. I was part of building what they have now. And then as a coach, just learning how to sustain that and seeing it from the other side. But But what was really cool about that whole experience for me is like, it's not magic. It's not rocket science. It's not like you go to UConn and they sprinkle magic fairy dust and, you know, bam, you're an All-American in a national championship. And I know that they make it look that way, which is like speaks volumes about what they do because it's really, really hard. But it's also very simple. And, you know, there's a, just a level of buy-in and simplicity that I love about the culture, about, you know, it doesn't have to be so thick and complicated with words and messages. It's just, do you want to do this or not? And this is what it takes, right? And then you got to get people there that will do whatever it takes. And then outside of that, probably the most valuable coaching thing I learned from, well, number one, resilience, you know, because it's hard and you got to show up and be consistent every day, but so is everything. Life is hard, right? But you got to be resilient. You got to show up every day and be ready to help these kids get better and be ready to help your staff. And the second was, most of the time, coaches, we can only screw things up. You know, we get in the way. We get in the way of greatness. We get in the way. We want to overcoach. And it's just not about us. And, you know, I love all the, like, you know, the coaching questions and all this. I mean, the best thing I can do for Aubrey and Michaela is let them play freely, guide them, mentor them, teach them. And then, all right, let's go see. We're going to do some really good things. We're probably going to do some things that aren't great, but the goal is to win the game. So continue to play with confidence and freedom in a structure, but not a system. You know, we're going to give you some structure and conceptually we're going to teach you how to play basketball. And then you got to just continue to learn. And that takes patience and time. And I learned that at UConn. But hopefully what that will give them is when they leave Vanderbilt, after we're done winning championships here, they can play for any coach and any system because they'll be great basketball players. And that's what I learned at UConn.
I do want to ask you about the SEC. You were talking about resilience. You have to be really resilient in the SEC. It's a gauntlet every year. You have to go through South Carolina. Like, this is not a surprise to anyone, but it does feel elevated this year. Do you feel like the competition is tougher this year than in the past 5 years? And do you just want to talk about like how tricky that is to go through as your conference schedule?
Yeah, I do. I don't think it's a secret. I'm sure it's arguable. I think this is the best conference in the country for women's basketball, hands down. It is, just because of the level of competition, the coaching, right? The players that come and play in this conference. Like you said, you got to go through the SEC to win a national championship. I think there was like between 4 and 6 teams in the Sweet 16. I should know that last year, but every year, essentially. And I think it was like a month and a half ago, they were like, hey, listen, every team left on our schedule is ranked. And I was like, what? Seriously. But how cool is that? Because it's like, that's what March is. That's what competition is. If you want to be great, you got to go up against the best, right? And so like, yeah, we can talk about rest and recovery and the gauntlet and like, but we don't control that. But what we get to do is compete against the best teams in the country, night in and night out, in our preparation to be winning in March, to be winning, right? So this great, we're going to learn about ourselves real quickly. And, you know, there's going to be some highs and there's going to be some lows, but you're going to build a lot of confidence playing in this conference. And who that wants to be great doesn't want that. Who that wants to be great doesn't want that. So 100%. It's so cool to be able to be part of it. And it is, I think, elevated probably for a bunch of different reasons. I think part of it is like people come here knowing that, hey, you're going to be going up against really great players and you're going to be in contention for a championship. I'm sure every program recruits that way here. We're all ranked, essentially, you know? And that's like, people want to go play in the NCAA tournament. We'll come to the SEC. Like 10 of us are going, you know? I think, why wouldn't you want
to
play?
The odds are in your favor.
The odds are in your favor, right? Come, right. You want to win a national championship, come to the SEC. Odds are going to be in your favor. So I think that that's really cool. I also think that, you know, being in the Power Four conference now and the landscape, it just is what it is, right? We have a lot of administrations and schools that value women's basketball, that value women's sports and are putting resources in it so that we can bring those players and coaches into the conference and keep them. And that's important as well.
Vanderbilt head basketball coach Shea Ralph, hanging out with us here on the program. Shea, thank you so much for your time and your insight. We can't wait to watch your team and their run the entirety of the rest of the season. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Super fun.
Appreciate Shea Ralph, Vanderbilt women's basketball head coach, for stopping by the program, giving us so much time and so much insight into her basketball brain, her coaching philosophy. Cass, what stuck out to you most about our conversation with Shea?
A few things, but I think the top thing was just Candace Story Lee, the athletic director at Vanderbilt, reminding her during the losing that, like, hey, you're coaching culture. You're building right now. Like, success is not going to come immediately. And I loved your reference to the avocado, you know, like we've talked here. It was a good one. It's a great comparison because we've talked here about Kim Caldwell and Tennessee, which we're going to get into. But this short leash of coaches, and we talked about this in the W, right? And you had Becky Hammon and Cheryl Reeve talking about giving a coach time to build. And I think especially at the college level, like, that is very important. You cannot just walk in and win. It's very, very rare and it's very, very hard. And so that's what stuck out most to me was that she, you know, Shea Ralph came in with, this is what I want to do. This is how I want to do it. She kind of feels out the administration and if she's going to be able to work with them. And they have a plan and they keep each other honest to that plan to get to this point. Because I think if you don't, if say Shea was like, I'm out of here, like losing is too much, or Candace Story Lee is like, you're not winning quickly enough for us, and they break that bond, then you're not sitting here potentially reaching the Final Four and having the most success your program has ever had. And I think that's an important lesson. And it does seem like the way she talked about her players, that's ingrained in them as well. And you have to set the culture and you have to set the standard and you have to set a basis for what you want your team to be if you're going to have any success.
1,000%. That stuck out to me as well. And we live in an instant gratification society that we want things immediately, mm-hmm. right now. We want instant turnaround. We want instant success. But the pillars of which Shea Ralph wants to build this program is not something that can be microwaved. Mm-mm. And right now in today's college sports, if you want to go into the transfer portal and spend a bunch of money on getting fifth and sixth year players that can come in and win for you right away, you can do that. But that is not necessarily a sustainable level of success. Mm-mm. What Shea Ralph wants to do at Vanderbilt is build the foundation, build the culture, and then the winning will come. And I have to give a lot of credit to Candace Story Lee for signing up for that. Because when Shea Ralph told us, when she said, yeah, I had a 6-year plan, I was like, 6 years? In this economy? Like, 6 years? So credit to Shea Ralph for being able to sell that 6-year plan. Credit to Candace Story Lee for signing up for that and saying, yeah, we'll have patience. We're good. We believe in your vision and we will let your vision cook. We will allow it time to really unfold. And credit to Candace Story Lee for sticking with that. Mm-hmm. Because there were probably a couple of years along the way, some bumps along the way, some bad losses along the way, where everyone was looking around and thinking, my goodness, at what point are we going to start to see, you know, the fruits of our labor a little bit? But for Candace Story Lee to be the one to tell Shea Ralph, like, look, you know, you said this was a process. You said this was going to take time. I have so much respect for Candace Story Lee. I love that woman. I got the chance to interview her last football season. And like, she makes you want to work harder and reach for more and have bigger dreams. Like, she's so eloquent. She's so driven. She's so motivated. She's so smart. And I don't think that it's a coincidence that Vanderbilt women's basketball is in the position that it's in right now, that Vanderbilt men's basketball looks like it's on a trajectory to potentially make a run in the men's tournament. Vanderbilt football, that has been the butt of every single joke in the SEC and in college football for my entire life, was just on the outside looking into the college football playoff. None of those things are a coincidence. So much of success, I think, comes from belief and trust from the top all the way to the bottom. Organizational structure matters. And I think we're seeing that with Candace Story Lee's unadulterated trust in Shea Ralph.
I also really liked, you know, we're coming off the Olympics and you heard this a lot, this idea of, well, you heard two things, right? Like, there were some athletes who honestly just kind of crumpled under pressure a little bit. And you heard Tara Lipinski. I'm a big fan of Tara and Johnny. Tara Lipinski, who was my childhood hero, talking a lot about it's different when you get into Olympic ice. And then you had other athletes who, you know, were just out there for joy, like excited to be at the Olympics. And so to hear Shay Ralph talk about that as well, and why I asked the follow-up is, you should be enjoying this, because she's right. You're going to look back and be like, yeah, I won a championship. But like, for some players in any sport, I'm sure the question is, what did it cost me? And if you have fun and joy, like, A, that's only going to help elevate your program. And B, like, it's just going to help your life. Like, life is way too stressful, as she said, and hard and difficult to have that pressure on you all the time when you should just be playing free and happy and joyful. It very much is like Caitlin Clark in Iowa of a couple years ago. And I think that's one of the contributing factors to why people latched onto that team so much. I felt that from Shay Ralph. And I think when Vanderbilt hits the tournament and shows that, the NCAA tournament, and shows that to the country, maybe the country will feel that as well.
I love that. It reminds me of the fever from last year.
Exactly.
I feel like the fever, I think it was Sophie Cunningham that said it felt like a college team. It felt like we were just having so much fun together. And that was palpable. You could feel that through the TV screen. Even though the fever went through injury after injury after injury, that could break a lot of teams. That could be too much for a lot of teams to overcome. But the fever just continued to find a way. They continue to find a way to win. And so I think that whenever you do have that level of joy in doing what you're doing, you don't feel the burnout. You don't get overwhelmed by the pressure. But that level of fun and that level of joy also has to be met with the work and the drive and the motivation. And look, winning is fun. We have fun when we win. So we have to, in order to win, we have to, you know, have all of these objectives. We have to go out there and give it our best 110% every single day. But it's this perfect marriage of the work and the fun. And the fun becomes work and the work becomes fun. And it does sound like in year five, Shay Ralph has a really great grasp of that. And I love what she said about Michaela Blakes as well. It can't just be the coach's philosophy. You have to have buy-in from the roster. And when your best player, leading scorer in all of college basketball, is buying into that vision, well, then it's so much easier for the rest of that roster to absorb.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. I loved our conversation with Shay Ralph. Appreciate her for hopping here on the program. But let's transition into some teams that maybe the vibe isn't quite as good.
We're going to have quite the optical flip transition here.
Yeah, we're going to go to like teams that are having so much fun to teams that are like, a little stressed out. Some teams that are feeling the heat a little bit. Let's go from Nashville to Knoxville, just a couple hundred miles east in the state of Tennessee. If we're going to talk about coaches that are feeling the heat, teams that are feeling the heat, feeling the pressure, not succumbing under the pressure, I think Tennessee fits that bill 1,000%. Tennessee, at the time of recording, recording on Wednesday afternoon, they go on the road at LSU on Thursday. So things don't get any easier for Tennessee. They're now on a 4-game losing streak. They have lost 5 of their last 6, including a loss to unranked Texas A&M, and including a loss on the road in Oklahoma most recently. Kim Caldwell has been in the headlines. You know, she's kind of skimmed Coach Yo on their post-game press conference after losing to Ole Miss. She got up in front of the media and after their brutal loss to South Carolina, said her team has a lot of quit in them. So there is fair criticism about Kim Caldwell and this Tennessee program on the court and off the court. Thoughts right now about where Tennessee is? How hot is their seat?
I mean, they're going to make the tournament. Like, they're going to make the tournament. I don't think that's kind of in question unless, I don't know, they're blown out by 70 the rest of the way, which doesn't feel like it's going to happen. Yeah. They have the resume. I think for Tennessee, like, you have to objectively look at this schedule in the back end and be really honest that that is a brutal final stretch to your season. And if you had success earlier, like if this team were different, if it seems like there's a lot of locker room issues, if those weren't going on, like maybe it looks different. But anyone in the SEC playing Oklahoma, LSU, and Vanderbilt to finish out the season is going to be really hard. Yeah. Not to mention like Ole Miss, Texas, you had South Carolina not that long ago. Like Tennessee has dropped seed lines precipitously. There is no way around that. They're going to be maybe a 7 or an 8. I think for Tennessee, what I want to see is next week in the SEC tournament. Can you get it together? Can you kind of build some momentum? Can you be happy with the results? And I think she said this last year during the tournament, but when you lose, can you be happy with your team and the way that you lose? I don't think they've like been happy with the way, they should not be happy with the way that they have taken some losses. So I want to see them just reset and see what they can do in the tournament when they are not facing SEC competition.
First of all, incredibly graceful use and pronunciation of the word precipitously.
Thank you.
By you. That was just so seamlessly put in there.
It's a good word.
Bravo. She must be a writer. But yet, to your point, in the month of February, Tennessee has played at UConn, at South Carolina, at home against Texas, at Ole Miss, on the road at Oklahoma, on the road at LSU, and then their treat at the end of it is Vanderbilt at home. So it's been a great, it's hard. On top of all of the off-the-court stuff that's been going on, you know, with some roster turnover, some roster question marks. So I think there's two sides of this. That one, the slip has been understandable. That I think any team in the country would find themselves vulnerable at some point in time with that schedule. The other side of that, too, is, and this is kind of what I'm hearing from a lot of Tennessee fans, and of course, take, you know, a fan's thoughts with a little bit of a grain of salt, especially Tennessee fans, love you, but y'all are crazy, is maybe the system just isn't working. Like, maybe this roster just isn't equipped to work within this system. And that, I think, is a very fair criticism that goes beyond just it's been a really difficult schedule. If your roster just doesn't fit the system, then that is just fundamentally not going to work. And then you add the strength of schedule on top of it, and all of those flaws and all of those warts get exposed more. You know, as difficult as Tennessee's grind has been, they also could be the beneficiary of a run in the SEC tournament.
Have you ever been cooking something new, like you're trying something new, you're baking, and the first time goes really well, and you're just like, wow, this is great. I'm amazing at this.
I'm so good at this.
I'm so good at this. And then you do it again, and it doesn't go as well, and it kind of falls apart. It's like beginner's luck.
Yeah. It's like you got cocky the first time.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's beginner's luck, and I'm not saying that Kim Caldwell got cocky, but it does feel like, you know, sometimes the first season just kind of things break a great way. And this second season seems to be, to your point, like something to look back on and make the tweaks and the changes and maybe figure out like who are the players at a D1 level that you want to bring in to run this system better or to add something and change something so that when it's not working, you can rely on something else. They have a big recruiting class coming in. We've talked about Olivia Edwards here. She's committed and she actually posted kind of some sort of video a couple of weeks ago after Kim Caldwell spoke out after the South Carolina game that made it clear she at least then was still committing to Tennessee. Kim Caldwell is not going to lose her job this season. However, the roster turnover and the coaching staff will be something to keep an eye on in terms of changes because you cannot continue this way. Something needs to happen or change or break differently for Tennessee going forward because the SEC isn't going to be easier next year.
And the expectations aren't going anywhere.
No.
Like the expectations for that program are colossal. Kim Caldwell was stepping into some of the largest, if not the largest, shoes that exist in this sport. And it's unforgiving. The SEC is unforgiving. The expectations are wonderful. And it's a privilege to have a job with that level of expectation. But there is also another side of that of it can be crushing mm-hmm. as well. One blowout loss to South Carolina. Now, all of a sudden, everybody wants to run you out of town. So I'm with you. I think that, you know, as much as we just waxed poetic about Candace Dorealy, the athletic director at Vanderbilt, I applaud her patience. And I think that that should be a cautionary tale to every athletic director across the country that sometimes patience can pay dividends. And I think that Kim Caldwell deserves a little bit of patience and a little bit of time, understanding she's only in year two. Mm-hmm. And she does have a very specific system, a very unique, quirky kind of system. So it's not always going to work at the level that maybe Tennessee fans would want it to. So the seat is hot, undoubtedly. But I don't think that will come in the form of Kim Caldwell losing her job. It won't come in the form of Tennessee missing out on the tournament altogether. They still have plenty of opportunities to redeem themselves throughout the course of the season. There's another team, though. It's been we have been hot and cold and hot and cold on this team, really all season long. They are also coming off of a rough loss like Tennessee. We're talking about Duke. It's a team that we were highly critical of early in the season, rightfully so, because Duke wasn't just losing to the South Carolinas and the UCLAs and the LSUs of the world. They were also losing to the South Floridas and the West Virginias of the world. But Duke was able to right their course in ACC play. Duke was able to find themselves back into the top 10, and then they just lost to unranked Clemson. Now, the thing about Duke is the ACC is not as deep or as competitive as the SEC. There aren't as many opportunities in the ACC tournament to redeem yourselves, especially considering they have a matchup with Florida State coming up. They finished the season on the road at number 21, North Carolina. Not very many opportunities throughout the rest of the regular season to really kind of stamp yourself as, you know, a certain ranking or a certain seed. Thoughts on Duke, where they are right now? How hot's the seat?
For Duke, what seemed to happen in the Clemson game is what has always been the issue around this Duke team is what happens when the offense isn't clicking, when it gets stuck in the mud, you know? Clemson scored 23 points, I think it was, in the fourth quarter after Duke held them to like 8 and 7 in the first and third. So there was a defensive issue there too, and that's really what they hang their hat on. But man, I hate to come back to this, but sometimes when I see Duke coming up on the schedule, I'm just like, can they score more than 55 points? And that's why I'm a little maybe chilling on them a little bit.
It's fair. If you want to make a run in the NCAA tournament, you're going to have to score more than 50 points. I don't care if you're the best defense in the sport. And I'm with you a little bit. It's just like kind of boring to watch Duke.
It's just, you know, and I know I think for all
they're not signing up for entertainment, but
I think for all of us, like the Duke South Carolina game in Birmingham last year is just like it's a little traumatizing.
Don't bring it up, Cass.
My bad. I'm sorry, everybody. We should have put a disclaimer on that.
Just sent a shiver down everyone's spine. Like, oh, there's only so much defense that these two teams can play. Please. But it is fascinating. You bring up South Carolina. And look, South Carolina also stifling defense. That's what Dawn Staley teams have really hung their hat on. Why are these two teams so different? They're both defensive-minded.
I think South Carolina just has more offensive weapons that are, you know, accustomed to stepping up when they need to. It doesn't seem like Duke always has that. Although I will say, like, Toby Fournier is up there for ACC Player of the Year. Like, she's had a strong showing, but they just, you know, have not had that offensive power.
Yeah. And I feel like on the South Carolina side of things, they can catch offensive firepower on any given night. Like, there are times, not every night, like, the South Carolina likes to live in that 55 to 53 range as well. They like to play that style of basketball. But if South Carolina needs to hit threes, if South Carolina needs a 20-plus point game from, you know, from Tessa Johnson, like, they can get that every once in a while. It's not the same. At least I don't view South Carolina in the same, like, oh, my gosh, I have to watch this team play defense for the entire game kind of feeling that I feel like I approached Duke with. How much has your mind changed about, or if at all, about Duke's ability to make a run in the tournament?
In the NCAA tournament? Not really. I mean, it's still like middling, you know, they reached the regional final last year. I don't think that's out of bounds for them this year. As you stated earlier, like it's so much about the bracket. They have two more regular season games. They have the ACC. Obviously, the ACC conference slate is not what the SEC is. It doesn't prepare you in the same way. I think the interesting thing, too, I know we're talking really Duke specific here, but those wins by Clemson and Virginia over Louisville, which was the number two team in the ACC, is probably going to help the ACC solidify more teams into the field, which is great. But if we're talking about seeding, I do wonder if Duke and Louisville drop a little bit because they're not bad losses, I want to say. You know, they're not, to your point, losing to like the net 100s. But
they're not great.
They're not great at a time when it matters. So if Duke and Louisville do fall down a little bit, like how does that play out in the bracket and the teams that they're going to meet? But I do think Duke's defense, like if they lock in and play the right type of defense that Kara Lawson always harps on, like is going to take them a long way because it's March and defense does matter.
Yeah, right. And I'm glad you brought that up too. When you lose matters. Mm-hmm. It's one thing if you lose in the middle of January, at the beginning of February, you can write that off as, look, we're trying something different. Early season losses happen. We're learning from them. We're growing from them. You lose in late February to an unranked team and you're viewed as a top four seed in this tournament, like if you're going to be hosting in the NCAA tournament, those aren't necessarily losses that you can take. So look, Tennessee and Duke absolutely are two teams that I believe can catch fire and can make noise, not just in their conference tournaments, but in the NCAA tournament, but two teams right now where it feels a little like put up or shut up time. All right, Cass, we do it every single week. Our player spotlight of the week. Who are you shouting out this week?
Oh, perfect segue. Clemson's Hannah Cohn. She hit the three-pointer to win for them. And then Virginia's Romy Levy hit the three-pointer for them to win. Both of these...
Three-point queens.
They happened like an hour between each other, kind of. Very similar ways. Both of these teams, Clemson and Virginia, have gone a long time since the tournament. And it's also their last tournament appearances were the only ones over the past like 10 to 15 years. So kudos to them. They were on the bubble. I think they were on kind of the right side of most people's bubbles, but getting wins like this are going to keep them solidly there. And that is where you want to be.
Massive wins. Clutch time shots. From both of these two players. I love that for you. Or I love that choice from you. I'm shouting out and also love that for you as well.
I like this choice for you. So
thank you so much. If you've been listening week over week, first of all, thank you so much. Welcome back. Second of all, I have been really trying to hold myself accountable to choose my spotlight player of the week outside of my comfy little confines of the Southeastern Conference. I, however, have struggled with that. Because I'm like, well, every single week we're just getting insane SEC performances. But this week I was able to hold myself to it because I am shouting out the one and only Iowa's Ava Hayden, who was a massive part, largely carried Iowa to their huge win over number six Michigan last week. Ava Hayden dropped 24 points, 10 rebounds, 2 blocks. Hannah Stolke also adding 12 rebounds and 11 points onto the day as well. Look, Iowa was one team that was squarely on our radar, suffered a couple of injuries, slipped a little bit, and I was like, okay, well, all that fun for nothing. And then Iowa was able to figure some things out, get a huge win over Michigan. So it's a shout out to Ava Hayden for a massive game against a really good team in Michigan. Shout out to Iowa for holding Michigan to 44 points. It's like a football score. And shout out to this Iowa team as a whole for being able to readjust and move forward despite some injuries.
Yeah, massive win. And for Ava Hayden, she really came on in the Big Ten tournament last year, which is the tournament I went to. So I think for the Big Ten tournament this year, I really want to see what that looks like, because as a freshman, you know, you're not a freshman anymore when March comes around. So now you're like, I don't know, I guess not a sophomore. So elevated play for Iowa, and we'll see how that carries them.
Yeah, no doubt. There are some honorable mentions. I wanted to give a shout out to Olivia Miles. I don't think there's enough that we could say about Olivia Miles now solidifying TCU as the top team in the Big 12. Well, the Big 12 is funky. We acknowledge that. But TCU's win, it's messy. It's messy. And I'm kind of here for it. It's like a little soap opera. Olivia Miles dropped 26 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. Nice little triple-double on the day for her. And a big win over Iowa State that has solidified the Horned Frogs as the top team in the conference. So just wanted to make sure that we gave a shout out to Olivia Miles as well. Some upcoming games to watch in women's hoops and Unrivaled. The playoffs start on Saturday. The Phantom, Mist, Laces, Breeze, Rose, and Vinyl will all advance into the playoffs, where the Hive and Lunar Owls have been eliminated. So just a reminder, I know that Unrivaled's home is in Miami, but the semifinals will head to Brooklyn on Monday, March 2nd. So, but anybody on the East Coast and the Northeast, at least, first of all, stay warm. Second of all, get your tickets to Unrivaled semifinals. And then in college hoops, Sunday is racked and stacked and loaded. Cancel all of your plans, because you're going to be sitting on the couch watching these games all day. Texas heads to Alabama, noon Eastern time. Duke and North Carolina, a rivalry game to round out the regular season, at noon as well. We've got Ohio State and Michigan State. South Carolina heads to Kentucky, yet another ranked SEC matchup. Vanderbilt and Tennessee. These two teams hate each other. There's a lot of bad blood there, and a great opportunity for Tennessee to get back to their winning ways and to do it in dramatic fashion over their rival, who's a top five team in the country. Baylor heads to TCU, and UCLA and USC rounding out the action on Sunday. Cass, that's a lot. But what stands out to you about the Sunday slate?
That is a lot. Duke UNC gave us some offense that first round, which a lot of us were surprised by. So I'll be tuning into that one. Baylor TCU.
Points.
Points in this rivalry.
We love that.
Baylor TCU, the Big 12 is messy and weird. And when is it not lately? But then UCLA and USC, rivalry game as well. UCLA could be the first undefeated Big Ten team to finish the regular season undefeated since Maryland in 2015.
Dang. Good for UCLA. You're two on the conference. They're already resetting the record books. All right. Appreciate everybody for joining us on today's episode. If you agree with us, disagree with us, have questions, have comments on anything that we discussed, let us know. If you're watching on YouTube, just leave us a comment below. But of course, you can also watch on your preferred podcast platform as well. Appreciate you as always. If you're new to the pod, then welcome in. Make sure to subscribe. And if you join us every single week, make sure you are subscribed as well. And I always appreciate you joining us every single weekend for hanging out with us. She's Cassandra Negley. You can find her wonderful writing on sports.yahoo.com. I am Caroline Fenton, and we'll see you next week.